This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Now, it's not often we get to hear the thoughts of a global retail legend, but I'm delighted that Daniel Rubin, he's the founder of Dune and author of Soul Survivor, How I Built a Global Shoe Brand, is with me now. Daniel, you're very welcome to the programme.
Be here.
Now, tell me this, Daniel. It all started for you on the King's Road, is that right? Back in the early 90s?
That's correct. Yes, we opened our first store on the King's Road in Chelsea in 1992.
Can I ask you about your journey to there? You're an accountant by trade, I believe. So when did you find yourself sort of stumbling into retail?
Well, I started off in footwear. My family has been in footwear for four generations.
You know,
my grandfather came from Russia in the 1890s, you know, way back. And he had a shoe factory eventually after a tough time. And I went into manufacturing. I qualified. My father always said, you know, don't become a shoe manufacturer, become a chartered accountant. And in those days, you know, you listen to your dad, and I became a chartered accountant. But eventually, when I was around 30, you know, he wasn't very well. So I went in to help him making shoes. And 50 years later, I'm still in the shoe trade.
Isn't that wonderful? And you've seen, obviously, huge change in those years. And if you talk about, you know, the King's Road and building that brand, like, how did you decide what the price point was and the line of shoes that you'd sell? Because they're clearly almost the two most important things in a high street shop. So what product did you have that was different to everybody else's?
I think you're quite right, because at the time there was a big change. All the low-priced footwear retailers, specialists, were going out of business because everybody else was selling shoes, you know, department stores, clothing stores. So we aimed it at what we called affordable luxury, which is sort of, you know, really nice quality shoes in leather at a reasonable price, you know, not at luxury prices, which were, you know, very, very high. So that was very much the aim. And I guess we've always been a slightly dressy brand. You know, we've always been very strong on occasion wear. So we started off with a lot of court shoes. I mean, this was before, you know, trainers started being worn by everyone.
Yeah.
So it's always been a slightly dressy brand, although that's changed a little bit over time as things, you know, as dressing and shoes have become more casual.
And it must be a real challenge to sort of marry production or sourcing or whatever it is with the trends in fashion. So even when you talk about there, like, trainers becoming everyday, like, that was a huge shift in terms of what people wear on their feet. So being there to meet those changes or even to predict them is probably a very difficult thing to do, is it?
I think it is. I mean, the trainer thing has started, you know, it started as performance. I think it accelerated after the pandemic. You know, everybody was at home either wearing slippers or trainers, going out in trainers. So it has become strong. I think there are just slight signs that maybe trainers for the moment have slightly peaked, that people, you know, want to get out, they want to dress up, they want to wear nicer shoes. So I think that change is gradually happening. And, you know, there's always a demand for really nice shoes. But you're right. You know, I think, 30% or so of the shoes that are worn are trainers. And that's all you see when you walk around the high streets, people wearing trainers. But I think there's a slight shift away from that, which obviously is very good for us.
Yeah. Tell me about, you say that one of the mistakes that you made, and obviously coming from a place of manufacturing where your family were manufacturing for four generations, did you leave it? You said that you in your book you said that you left it too late to go to the Far East. Did you were you loyal to the manufacturing, to the craft, to the family, to the people who had worked maybe with your family for many years, and that you maybe were too late to implement the change that was happening in the marketplace?
I think it was partly that, to be honest. The main reason was, and you know, we all suffer from this, I was so involved in the day-to-day, you know, the day-to-day issues, that my mistake was just not stepping back and looking at the big picture and seeing that inevitably, you know, shoes are a high labor content industry, 30% of the cost is in the labor, and inevitably, you know, it was going to go out of the UK to the Far East, where labor costs are so much lower. So I think it wasn't so much loyalty. I think it was just not really stepping back enough and seeing what the trend was going to be. And, you know, when I went out the first time in the early 1980s to the Far East and saw them making shoes, I came back and said to my partner, you know, we can't continue with this because we just can't compete. They were making really nice shoes, the same as our factory in London, but at half the price.
Yeah. Yeah, so inevitably, you have to face the inevitable. Tell me about the international aspect of the business now. Firstly, your take on the high street scene in the UK and the transformation, the way people buy now, the disruption that's been to the high street. You say that 35% of your sales are now international and you want to grow that to 50%. Does that mean that the UK is not really as important as a market for you anymore?
Well, it's still important. You know, it's still, still very important. But I think our growth is going to come from outside the UK. You know, having just single shops, footwear shops, isn't that easy. I mean, a lot of our business done is now with third-party partners, you know, with Marks and Spencers and Next and people like that.
Yeah.
And I think the future, the exciting future for us as a brand is certainly international. You know, we now have a quite a big business with department stores in the US. We sell to something like 30 countries around the world. We have a very big business in the Middle East and Dubai and Saudi Arabia. So I think although we are not totally pessimistic about the UK, we think that the biggest growth for our business is certainly going to come outside of the UK. And yeah, as you say, we want to change it from 35% to 55% of our trade coming from outside the UK, because, you know, unfortunately, the UK is not a dynamic economy at the moment. The opportunities for growth are not as great as they are internationally. You know, international, look, be honest, international is not easy because you're going into a market that's already got a lot of competition. But it's an exciting opportunity for us, and it's certainly the one that excites me the most.
Yeah, it's interesting as well that you say that it is tough, you know, to operate what was the traditional type of footwear shop, you know, standalone on the high street. You know, I think maybe shoes were probably things that people went and bought online more laterally than in the early days. So have you seen a shift to people finding, I suppose, more confidence about buying shoes online that they wouldn't have had 5 or 6 years ago?
Funny enough, I don't necessarily think so. You know, about 30% of our business is online. I still think there is a lot of people who want to touch and feel the shoes. And what we've got now is what's called omni-channel retailing. So people, you know, they research online, they go into the store, they feel the shoe, they go to the competitors, they then come home and say, actually, I did like those June shoes. That's what I'm going to buy. So I think that's what's exciting about, is that seamless shopping, both online and in-store. But we've certainly seen a resurgence of in-store shopping. I think, you know, during the pandemic, it was all online. But I think gradually people are coming back and they like that shopping experience. But what it does do, it puts a tremendous onus on the retailers to make that shopping experience special with really good customer service, really good display and all those things that make, you know, shopping a pleasure.
Yeah. How active are you in the business these days, Daniel? Are you still excited? Are you close to the action in terms of new markets and all that?
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm the chairman, so I don't get involved in day to day. I'm really passionate, as I say in the book, about the product. So I'm at the moment sitting in our bag room because bags are becoming more important, just looking at some of the bags that are really
good, man.
Some of them are works of art. So I still get involved with the product. I still get involved with the brand. And I still make everybody's life difficult by being impatient and saying, why wasn't that done yesterday? But no, I'm not involved day to day, but I own the business. So, you know, it's really important to me that we do well. But, you know, I'm very lucky. I've got a really strong management team. And that makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. And finally, can I ask you about the experience of actually writing the book? Was all this stuff in your head over the years? Was it always the plan that you might try and put your experience and your journey down on paper?
Not really. I mean, I think there were a couple of things. First of all, 50 years is a long time. And, you know, I'm getting on. So, you know, you step back and you do reflect more about what happened in the past. And also because I've got a little bit more time, but I actually found the writing experience really pleasurable. I really enjoyed it. I think I'm a frustrated writer. And the interesting thing is once I started writing, a whole flood of memories came back.
There you go.
You know, my son said to me, did you keep a journal? And I didn't keep a journal, but once I started writing, I suddenly remembered all these incidents that happened. And I really enjoyed writing about it. So, yeah, it was a good experience.
All right. Well, the book is called Soul Survivor, How I Built a Global Shoe Brand. The author is Daniel Rubin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much indeed. I've enjoyed it very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.